Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Group 1 AI in the South African Law podcast series. I'm Gavin Rowe, SC, your co-host for today's discussion. Joining me is my colleague, Sashaba Mohapi, an advocate and member of the Group 1 Advocates Chambers in South Africa. Santon and Sashaba will be leading today's episode, and we're excited to dive into another fascinating topic. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Professor Sylvia Papadopoulos, a leading expert in law and technology. The professor is an associate professor in the Department of Private Law at the University of Pretoria. I always remark on this that our guests have intimidatingly impressive CVs. She's also the acting director of the Center for Intellectual Property Law. Her academic achievements include a BLC, an LLB, an LLM, cum laude, and an LLD, with her doctoral research focusing on e-commerce, digital content, and consumer protection in South Africa. She has also advised on key legislative matters, ec-chaired international working groups, and contributed to discussions on AI's role in financial services. In today's episode, led by Sashaba, we'll explore the transformative impact of AI on legal education and its impact on the profession. Welcome, Professor. Welcome, Sashaba. Over to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Gav. Prof, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for making the time. Prof, I want to start by where our paths crossed. And this was at JAW 2024. JAW stands for Johannesburg Arbitration Week. It's a prestigious conference on arbitration, which in that year attracted delegates from the region, the Southern African Development Community, because ministers of justice had been present. There was going to be a signing of a memorandum of understanding to put arbitration as a recognized dispute resolution avenue for these states. So at this conference, Prof, you will recall no doubt that there was a segment called Man versus Machine. I could maybe just relate my experience of that as a participant, and you can maybe also tell us how you got involved. As a member of a six-member moot court arbitration team, I was part of the Advocates for Transformation team. The moot concerned an international dispute involving three parties in two disputed sale agreements, and it had a conflict of law aspect to it, whether the South African law, Mozambican or Lesotho law applied to the disputes. My team acted for the South African party. The two other teams, Young AFSA and SADC Lawyers Association, acted for the two other parties. All three teams were requested to prepare written submissions, or heads of argument as we know them, for the parties. So we had on the one hand the human panel, and we had on the other hand the machine, Prof, which I believe you were called the guardians of the machine. So at the end of the segment, I'm very proud to say that our team won. And interestingly, we had two differing outcomes in the outcome of the moot. So in the one we won, I'll leave it to guess which one. But and in the other we lost. But ultimately, apart from these outcomes of the awards, we also won as the best moot team. Now, Prof, if you could just tell us about your involvement, as I know that you, together with your two colleagues, the Dean of Law, Professor Schumann, as well as Professor Babulal Frank, were the so-called guardians of the machine. If you could just please tell us how you got involved in this demonstration.
So just to clarify, there were three panelists on the appeal panel.
More, I think.
Yes. There were about five.
Five of esteemed, no doubt, senior judges from courts of appeal, and there were about three of you guarding the machine. Doesn't sound like a fair fight.
I hazard a guess, but I don't think it was. We were involved because the University of Pretoria has a long standing relationship with AFSA, and we were invited to participate as the machine using AI to demonstrate its capabilities at that stage. It had just been released, or generative AI had just been released to the public a couple of months before. And obviously it was a topic of hot debate and discussion. And the point behind it was just to demonstrate capabilities and to stimulate debate at the JAWR conference amongst a very impressive body of delegates and presenters. So our role was basically to take the team's submissions. We didn't take the oral arguments into account, although that could have been done. So we just took the written submissions and fed it, if you like, into the AI and used the AI to produce an AI award.
Yes. So, Prof, just an interesting aspect of the demonstration was that none of the awards showed which was the human or the machine. So part of an interesting and very fun part to it was that delegates were asked to guess which one was the human, which one was the machine. And I remember looking at them and really not being able to tell apart which was which. That must have been something of interest to you too.
Definitely. Using each of the team's written submissions, heads of arguments, along with the fictional facts, we also demonstrated or experimented, because at that stage you had ChatGPT 3.5, which was the free-to-use, beta version, and then we had also access to the paid-for 4.0 version.
So just to understand this...
Sorry, you're sitting a bit far from your microphone.
Just to understand this, when you say we used AI, it was nothing other than, in this instance, open source AI.
Absolutely.
The sometimes derided, I wouldn't say the much derided, ChatGPT 3.5, free to air, as it were, and ChatGPT 4. So that was, I'm sure you tweaked them to produce the outcome that you wanted a judgment, but that's the basic technology you were using.
The basic technology we were using. And one of the, we didn't touch any of the submissions. We didn't give additional materials. It was purely based on the facts that were given to us. The heads of argument, these were both fed into both versions with the exact same prompt, produce an arbitration award based on these documents. The difference was quite marked between 3.5 and 4, with 4 clearly being a marked improvement on the reasoning, the language, the way that it crafted the argument. And then when it generated the results, we took the stronger result, the 4.0 version, and that was given to delegates at the JAWR conference, and they were then asked a series of questions identifying which was the human award by the esteemed panel, which was the AI award. I think if I recall the statistics, it was about a 60-40 split on correctly identifying the AI as the AI-generated award versus the human-generated award.
Can I just interrupt then for a moment?
Yeah.
To clarify, 60% of the delegates or the attendees at the conference identified the AI judgment as being written by AI, and 40% got it wrong, as it were. Is that correct, Professor?
That is correct, yes.
So that's within the margin of error, 60% versus, or you could almost throw dots.
I think... another very interesting aspect that Sachaba highlighted was that the AI came to a different conclusion to the human panel, gave a different award and found in favor of a different party. But the majority of participants were able to correctly identify the human-generated award, which shows an awareness of the distinctive qualities of human legal reasoning. But the AI-generated award was sufficiently credible enough to challenge human expertise. And I think that was the debate point. That was the eye-opening moment of this experiment.
And presumably, the delegates were all lawyers or people well experienced in the legal system. So the fact that 40% of experienced lawyers did not identify their AI suggests that maybe it isn't that easy to identify human authorial content versus artificially generated content.
Yes, so you've got two things. We've got the massive leap in legal reasoning or argumentative skills or reasoning skills that Gen AI gave us, as well as being sufficiently credible enough to challenge human expertise, and these are leading expertise in legal argumentation. The case was obviously very ambiguous, so I don't think that AI got the judgment wrong, because many of the delegates also said, and it was a 52-48 split, on whether or not the result could have gone either way. So that was another significant aspect that came out. It was the facts were ambiguous, deliberately so, and that the judgment could have gone, or the arbitration award could have gone, either way.
Oh, certainly. So, and I wonder, Prof, if you recall, but ultimately the moot arbitration demonstration came to this resounding conclusion that, well, AI is here and it's here to stay, and that it was up to delegates to make use of it to be more effective, particularly in relation to costs, you know, reducing the costs of litigation. So I think that was quite an important conclusion or takeaway.
I think so too, and I think we also need to take into account the rapid increase in capabilities. So rough estimates from the tech world are that AI is increasing in capability 2.5 times every 3 months. Mm. So its capabilities are increasing at an exponential speed. So the ChatGPT...
Is that the Moore's law of AI? So not a doubling of every 18 months of capacity, but a doubling of every 3.5 months. Sure. So it's Moore's law on steroids.
Yes, absolutely. So the ChatGPT that we are using or seeing the use of now, I mean, it's got a lot of additional capabilities. Deep thinking is one of their things. Agents working on your behalf. So there's a leaps and leaps, and that was merely a year. Mm. But we're also seeing AI coming into legal practice in many, many different alternative applications. So you've got AI obviously automating routine tasks, the bane of most lawyers' lives. But you're seeing it in legal jobs, if you were, contract review, due diligence, e-discovery. And then the more advanced predictive analytics, litigation outcome forecasting, and then the newer one on the block is AI being used as regulatory compliance enforcement systems.
Yeah. So, Prof, I mean, this is absolutely interesting, and I think it demonstrates how the legal landscape and the way we will practice law in the future is going to vastly differ from the way things have been done in the 19th century. And most certainly that AI is here to stay is perhaps one of the running themes of this podcast. And Prof, this is no doubt something that exercises the minds of academia on how to prepare lawyers of the 21st century. How does this look in academia?
I did an AI webinar for the LPC last week, and one of the main messages that I carried through was that lawyers have a tendency to think around how we do things today and how we can use technology or AI especially to do things quicker, faster, more cost effective. But I think we need to move our minds onto how are we going to do things differently, or how will things be done differently, which is a bigger leap than just adopting technology alongside the job that we already do. So if you're thinking about your clients out there, they want a solution to a problem, and it is our legal, ethical, and moral duties to provide them with a solution to the best of our abilities. And if those abilities include using technology, then that is what we should be doing. So all legal professionals across the board, from our highest echelons of judges and practitioners down to our students, need to prepare for an AI integrated practice of law.
May
I ask on that question? And lawyers are notoriously conservative and maybe resistant sometimes to change unnecessarily so. What is the attitude of students? Do they feel threatened? How are we going to get jobs when mundane tasks such as, you referred to, e-discovery, due diligence, the classical things which law firms could use candidate attorneys and junior associates to do, is now a routine task which can be augmented, in some cases replaced, by machine learning?
I think there's more resistant, and I say this very, very, very carefully, in the older generation who are less digital savvy, more set in their ways of practicing law, more experienced in the human practice of law. Students are very positive, they're very eager, and obviously it makes a lot of their studies a lot easier. But they're also more digitally literate, they're easier to train and to show how to do something new. So you can give them AI tools and say, we're implementing this in the next 3 months. Please get yourself familiar with how it works and play around with it and experiment with it. And they will happily do it, and they will make a mistake, and then they will figure out this is how you do this on this particular piece of software or tool. Older, more settled legal practitioners are a little bit hesitant.
I like that euphemism for people like me. I'm not necessarily old, I'm just older and more settled.
In your ways. and they also bring to the party a little bit of, you know, perspective and caution, which is also necessary when you're dealing with technology. So I think it's a nice mix, and I think students are generally more eager to get on top of a tool and figure out its limits.
Yeah, well, I'll have you know, despite Gav's self-deprecating humor, he's most certainly one of the foremost, I think, silks that incorporate tech into his practice. And I know that, you know, he basically runs a paperless practice, and he, you know, he was showing me how AI is now also involved in PDFs and the like. So, Gav.
Yeah. But still, nonetheless, you do reach a level of conservatism. But thank you for those kind words, Ishara.
Yeah, I think it's also quite a resistance in the judiciary. Having to deal with cases, having to adjudicate in these areas, it's something new, something you're not familiar with. So it does bring about a little bit more resistance.
Yes.
But so, Shoshab, if I can just throw in something. That certainly, I had the experience of acting recently, and I'm just using the most basic. There's an AI adjunct to Adobe. And just when encountering a case, it's bewildering the first time you read a case, whether it's as a brief or whether it's as a judge. And just to get a sense of AI's assistance doing the mundane tasks of chronology, dramatis personae, who's acting for whom, the description of the parties, saved hours of time. I don't know if you've had either of you have had that experience.
Yeah. No, most certainly. So I was also involved in an arbitration, and we had a transcript that ran into the 500s. And, you know, just to get who said what, it really was very useful to just also be able to pinpoint, because what it does is it brings out the references, and so you can go look at where this was said and so on. So yeah, for plowing through reams and reams of paper, very useful too.
Can I ask the professor this from, we both sound a bit enthusiastic, but Sushaba and myself, but what words of caution do you have from an academic perspective to the profession when it starts to use these tools? I mean, we've heard so many horror stories, but newspaper reports of the misuse by experienced lawyers of AI tools.
There are a lot of risks, obviously. One of the ones that has been prominent in a whole list of cases now in the past year is the fact that AI hallucinates. It makes up case citations, and a lot of practitioners have been wrapped over the knuckles for that. I think you need to always have the human in the loop idea at the back of your mind. You need to remember that you have an ethical and a moral duty to represent your client properly, legally, ethically. And that requires making sure that AI hasn't made a mistake. AI can also be notoriously vague. It can misinterpret. And it can obviously reinforce and highlight bias, which I think is one of our biggest dangers with AI, is using data that is inherently biased and discriminatory will carry that out in your results, and you need to be aware of that. It's not perfect. It's a great tool, but it's not perfect. And mistakes come in, and we need to guard against those. But you also have a lot of cybersecurity issues, data privacy issues around it. You know, if your AI tool is a general purpose, open to the world kind of tool, every bit of information that you're feeding into ChatGPT is being used to retrain that AI. And that is one of the dynamics of AI, is that it constantly learns. So if you're feeding in submissions and heads of arguments with client personal data, it is free to the rest of the world to see it. And it is used, again, in the training of that AI. So you need to be very careful about what are the permissible uses of AI, what does the tool do with information that you input, how do you input that information, because it has very distinct privacy and those kinds of issues around it.
All right. So the caution here is AI is a vehicle, and don't go sleeping on the wheel.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yes.
That it seems to be there is a crying and urgent need for ethical guidelines, regulations, frameworks, handrails, whatever you want to call it, about how to go about using AI in an ethical fashion. So it's not left in a laissez-faire manner of lawyers self-regulating themselves, but something which can assist us. Have you had any experience in helping, whether it's the Society of Advocates, whether it's the LPC, drafting legal regulations about the ethical use of AI by practitioners?
Nobody has directly contacted us, any of the professional bodies. Nobody has worked on those. But there are sort of publications out there. We have a lot of the IBA, the International Bar Association, has produced, and I worked on when we worked on those. So they have a little bit of a guideline for practitioners. But we're also seeing bars across the world starting to issue those guidelines and putting things out there. So there are examples that we can look to. It's not a long, it doesn't have to be a long guideline, but it is something that is definitely necessary just to guide the courts, to guide legal practitioners on what are the things that you need to watch out for, what are your requirements around that.
Now, this has been a fascinating conversation. I think you should be getting calls from every legal professional body in the country representing legal practitioners to say, please, we need some assistance. Our members are being let loose into uncharted territory, and it's an incredibly useful tool. But we do need the input of academia, regulators, people with experience like yourself to assist. I don't know if you have any thoughts about the regulatory gap. It's not just for the ethical use of AI, but data protection and the need to preserve data sovereignty and avoid the biases which you've spoken about in this country.
I think rules or guidelines for the profession are a critical aspect, but they are not of any use unless we have a very large-scale upskilling of the legal profession. And that is from your students all the way up to your most senior of senior legal practitioners. It's about knowing what to look out for. It's about knowing what you should and shouldn't be doing, what you need to look for in the terms and conditions of the tools that you are dealing with, what are the limitations. But it's a huge digital AI literacy upskilling that the profession needs, and that needs to be driven by our governing bodies.
Right. Prof, can I just ask this? I know that at university level, students are taught where to find the law and critical and analytical skills, pretty much what makes very good lawyers of the future. But is there room or is there a world where law students could use AI to augment their learning experience at universities?
Very definitely. I mean, the universities, we're at the heart of education, and AI has uprooted education in so many ways. You know, we thought we were really fancy when we went online with the COVID pandemic, and we got our law students through 2 years of law without a single in-person class. And then along came AI, and suddenly all those essays and assignment submissions were quite similar. Clearly, we had to adjust very, very quickly on things like assessment and maintaining integrity in assessment. But AI has been experimented with. It's given us, most universities use learning management platforms, so it's given us insight into student engagement, problem areas, helping struggling students. So AI on that side of things has given us a lot of information, but it's also on a practical level. We've had in our legal clinic the final year law students, LLB students, can take legal practical skills as a subject, and they are then put into a de facto legal practice situation where they see clients and help the indigent and the poor. And they were run through a course of how to conduct an interview with your client, because they don't have those skills. They don't have those practical legal skills. So we used generative AI to create a persona, an avatar, neurotic divorcee who's having a custody dispute, and how would you interview, how would you, you know, what sort of questions, what sort of empathy do you have to display, what is the list of information that you need from your client on that first consult. And they were able to put in any set of facts, they were able to change their avatars, their client avatars up. So it was a brilliant experiment using AI in a very safe, controlled environment, giving them a critical skill which usually academia would not be able to do.
Wow, very fascinating.
Yeah, a tool not to be feared, but rather to be embraced as an augmentative engine of legal practice.
Well, in conclusion, Prof, AI is dramatically changing how we practice law. It offers considerable improvements for making justice accessible and affordable, but it requires responsible use. For junior lawyers and law students in particular, how should they be preparing themselves for the ever-changing future? What's their takeaway from our discussion?
Use it. Embrace it, but use it responsibly and with respect. Be aware. Don't assume that it is correct just because it's technology, because we also have that attitude. It's technology and there's nothing wrong and it can't go wrong, but things can go very, very wrong. Mm. And yes, upskill yourself. That is my broad mission in life, is upskill yourself. Educate yourself. Listen to webinars. Listen to conference chats.
Listen to podcasts like this present
listen
one.
Listen to podcasts. Upskill yourself in every single way that you can. Understand what you're dealing with and use it responsibly.
Absolutely. Yes, so the ethics don't go away. Our ethical responsibility still remains, and it's all about making use of AI, bearing in mind those obligations. Kev?
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the discussion today. Much to ponder about and much to do.
Thank you very much, Prof. It's been a very interesting and stimulating debate, discussion. To our listeners, thank you for joining us and stay tuned to our future episodes.